Radio Prague News.
The government has again approved a stabilization package rejected by MPs in the lower house on Wednesday. The Chamber of Deputies has approved a bill designed to reduce overcrowding in Czech prisons. And the Senior Citizens Council has petitioned the president over a bill slowing down old age pensions. The government has again approved a stabilization package rejected by the Chamber of Deputies on Wednesday, where several rebel MPs were instrumental in its blocking. The coalition government needed 101 votes, but six civic Democrats opposed to the idea of further raising the two-tier VAT rate voted against. The bill is being pushed to help lower the deficit. The centre-right government led by Prime Minister Petr Nečas is staking its future on the bill by tying it to a vote of confidence. The Prime Minister suggested on Thursday that the next few weeks would reveal rebel MPs' true intentions, that is, whether they were purposely trying to damage the government or were honestly concerned over program issues. The Chamber of Deputies has approved an amendment aimed at reducing overcrowding in prisons. The bill, rejected earlier by the Senate, emphasizes alternative sentences such as home detention or parole. Under the bill, the minimal period to be eligible for parole would be shortened, a key factor senators rejected. The bill passed in the lower house on Thursday with 102 votes. The Justice Minister Pavel Blažek has called the amendment essential. According to available data, the country's jails in August held 23,200 inmates, 2,500 over the limit. Some jails are overcrowded by as much as 30%. In other news, the Senior Citizens Council has petitioned President Václav Klaus to not sign into law a government bill slowing down the growth of old age pensions. The amendment on pensions, part of a broader austerity package aimed at reducing the gap in public spending, was passed in the lower house on Wednesday. According to the bill, which was rejected earlier by the Senate, pensions will be adjusted yearly by a third of the increase in prices and in real wages. The Senior Citizens Council is some 320,000 members strong. 1.7 million people in the Czech Republic are over the age of 65. Their average monthly pensions amount to 10,740 crowns. In sports, sixth seed Tomáš Berdych beat the favored Roger Federer Wednesday night in a quarterfinal match at the U.S. Open. It took four sets for the highest-ranking Czech tennis player to beat the 17-time Grand Slam winner and this year's Wimbledon champion. The final score was 7-6, 6-4, 3-6, 6-3. Berdych will face Andy Murray in the semifinal on Saturday. And finally, a look at the weather. The coming days should be sunny with possible light showers and daytime temperatures reaching highs of around 19 to 21 degrees Celsius. I'm Jan Wellinger, and that's the end of the news.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Maggie Lund, coming up in today's programme. The lower house rejects key aspects of Prime Minister Nečas's austerity package, leaving the Civic Democrat leader and his party in a precarious position. In tennis, the Czech Republic's Tomáš Berdych has beaten Roger Federer to progress to the semi-finals of the US Open. And in today's panorama, we talk to David Březina, an award-winning Czech typographer, about the challenges of taking on new and complex writing systems. That's all still to come in the programme, so stay tuned. The Nečas cabinet suffered its first significant defeat in its consolidation drive on Wednesday. The lower house rejected a crucial part of its austerity package, a controversial bill on tax hikes aimed at bringing the gap in public finances below 3% of GDP in 2013. The move has left the Prime Minister fighting not only for the future of his reform cabinet, but primarily his own future as the head of the Simic Democratic Party and the government. Daniela Lazarova has the story.
The Prime Minister, who has acquired a reputation of relentlessly ploughing ahead with fiscal reforms despite a series of crippling corruption scandals and waning popularity, on Wednesday voiced his determination to keep the fiscal reforms on track or let the government fall.
Even the best tennis player occasionally gets a serve wrong and needs to try the serve again. That is what we are about to do.
The centre-right government lost no time making good on this promise, sending the bill, unrevised, back to the lower house on Thursday morning and linking it to a vote of confidence. However, despite the Prime Minister's uncompromising message, it is clear that the six rebels within his own Civic Democratic Party have won important ground, and the Prime Minister is not fully prepared to call their bluff. Speaking to Newsmen late Wednesday, Mr. Nechar said the bill would be open to revision on condition that the proposed changes were acceptable to all coalition parties. This is clearly an admission that the Prime Minister's earlier strategy of making the rebels accept the tax hikes or bear responsibility for the fall of the government is seen as highly unreliable. The rebel deputies are about to get their way, though neither side appears to be quite sure what concessions they will demand. The six Civic Democrats who voted against the tax hikes have few ideas to offer when it comes to where else the 25 billion crowns that the tax hikes are expected to generate are to be found. Deputy Petr Tluchoš, who voted against the bill on the grounds that raising taxes goes against the party's policy program, said the money should be saved on the expenditure side, citing pensions, social welfare benefits and the health sector. All three are highly sensitive areas where severe cuts have already been made. Meanwhile, the Civic Democratic Party's coalition partners, Topo 9 and Lidem, are far from happy to have the hard-won agreement on the proposed austerity measures reopened. Deputy Prime Minister Karolina Pík from Lidem said there was a real danger of the agreement collapsing.
The 1% tax hike in the lower and basic VAT rates was not something we were enthusiastic about in the first place, but we agreed to it on the argument that it will bring the necessary funds to state coffers. To open this bill is to tamper with a very fragile compromise that we worked long and hard to reach.
Finance Minister Miroslav Kalousek from Topo 9, whose fiscal consolidation plan is being unexpectedly scuppered by the rebellion in the Civic Democratic Party, said the Civic Democrats needed to resolve their problems fast.
If a number of Civic Democrat deputies insist on holding this course and voting with the opposition, then the government will lose its majority in parliament and a different political solution will have to be found.
However, all parties involved in this dispute know there aren't many political solutions on the horizon. Given their low public support ratings, it will be suicidal for any of the coalition parties to support early elections, meaning that some kind of compromise will have to be found which would allow the present government to continue in office, with or without the Prime Minister, whose political future now appears to be very much on the line.
Daniela Lazareva with that report. And if you want to get in touch and tell us what you think of that story, you can go ahead and write to us at english@radio.cz. But now in sports news, Czech tennis player Tomáš Berdych scored an important win at the US Open when he beat world number one Roger Federer in the tournament's quarterfinal. Berdych, whose play against the Swiss has been described as overwhelmingly powerful, will next play Andy Murray of the UK for a spot in the US Open final. Jan Richter has the details.
Flushing Meadows on Wednesday night saw Tomáš Berdych knock out the world number one and five-time US Open champion Roger Federer in four sets, 7-6, 6-4, 3-6 and 6-3. Berdych, who has had a mixed season so far, was not expected to score his fourth victory in the last seven meetings against the top-seeded Swiss. Federer had a better start to the game and was leading Berdych 2-0 and then 3-1. But the Czech, seeded sixth, stepped up and took the first set in a tiebreak. Berdych broke at the start of the second set as well, and Federer found no weapon against the Czech's consistent, powerful forehand play. In the third set, Federer came back, scoring four games in a row against Berdych and taking the whole set. But the Czech again found his composure in the fourth set. He broke Federer to make it 5-3. He then served an ace to get a match point, which he capitalized on with another powerful serve to win the game. The Czech player later told the news conference that things just worked out right for him in the game.
There was everything just right today, so let's get up to the result, what was happening on court. So, yeah, probably there was not a bad spot, of course, that I lost third set, but, you know, I mean, I cannot count that I'm going to be beating Roger in straight sets and not to get even any trouble.
Berdych's convincing victory came after a bit of struggle in the third set, in which he suddenly became somewhat nervy and made two double faults. But the 26-year-old Czech said he still knew Federer had a longer way to go.
I just felt it in the end of the third set, you know, where he, you know, took the break back, then he made another one, you know, and he was really pushing, you know. And then the set was over, and he still needs two more, I need only one. So I was still in the better position, and I was actually mentally ready for that. I just need to stay as close as possible with him, either if the crowd's gonna be on his side, he's gonna be play well, but whatever has happened, I was just trying to stay close, and yeah, I got a chance, I made it, and then finish it with my serve.
In the semi-final of the US Open, Tomáš Berdych will play third seed Andy Murray. The Scot has had a spectacular season so far, having won the London Olympics and reaching the final at Wimbledon. But Berdych says he has full confidence in his own style of play.
He reached the results, won the gold medal, then been in the final of Wimbledon, so probably it helps to him a lot, but probably similar to matches with Roger, you know, that even if he's playing well and then, you know, I come up with my game, which doesn't like maybe too much like the other guys, so then, you know, I bring something different and that could be my chance.
At the post-match news conference, Tomáš Berdych came out a little edgy when reporters compared his win over Roger Federer to what happened in the second round of this year's Wimbledon, where the Czech underdog Lukáš Rosol upset Rafael Nadal. Tomáš Berdych seemed to have taken the question rather personally.
Well, I just hope that you're not comparing me with Rosol. Don't you? No, you did. You just said that there was a big upset and Rosol would beat Nadal, and then you mentioned my match here. So first of all, I don't think that we are in the same position, that it's actually that big upset, but all right, you said that. And I don't know what else to say. I mean, is it something wrong that we are from Czech and beating big guys, or no? Good, okay. It's a good thing, yeah.
The semifinal match in which Tomáš Berdych will play Andy Murray for a spot in the US Open final is scheduled for Saturday at 11 a.m. local time.
That was Jan Richter reporting on that story. But now, type design is an ancient art enjoying a renaissance in the computer age. The specificities of writing systems that were once passed down from master to apprentice can now be worked with by designers anywhere in the world who have the patience and the talent to take on a foreign script. One such designer is David Brzezina, one of the founders of the Brno type founder Rosetta. In 2008, his Scholar type family received international recognition, and he is now working on a font for the Gujarati writing system, used by over 60 million people in the Indian subcontinent. Christian Falvey talked to the designer and began by asking him how he became interested in type design in the first place.
It just came gradually. I think some 10-7 years ago I started realizing that there must be some people designing these things, and I started looking into it, and then I just start doing it in order to learn about it, and then I realized, hey, I like doing this, let's do it a little more. I wasn't fascinated by letter forms in my childhood, nothing like that. It's just came a bit late, I guess. So I like playing with curves, because when you draw letters you need to draw really nice smooth curves, and it's like sort of a meditation. So that's what I think I like most about type design.
And you also teach typography.
Yes.
It's such a subtle art, you know, a letter is a letter, and it's only these very tiny differences that make all the difference in between different fonts. There's so much feeling involved in that. How do you teach it to other people?
I guess you need to have a special mindset to become a type designer. You need to have attention to detail, but also the ability to look from distance at the thing, if what you have done actually matters, sort of keeping the big picture. And these things you cannot really teach. You can point the students toward this, but you cannot really teach them. What I try to do is I try to help students make it work, make the typefaces look consistent, have a sort of good functional qualities, but the rest is like up to them.
Maybe one thing that probably a lot of people don't appreciate about your work, that it's not just sitting down and making something that's appealing to you and to your customer, but it involves a tremendous amount of research a lot of the time, I assume. Mm. You've already done several scripts in languages which I assume you don't speak, like Greek or Armenian.
Yes.
This work takes a great deal of research. Yeah. What does that involve?
Specifically, yes.
I assume you don't have to learn the language itself, but you do have to do a lot of work understanding the system, especially yes. with something like Gujarati.
Mm. Yeah. What you need to do is expose yourself to as much material as possible, as well as historical, I don't know, such as manuscripts or first prints, and then all the lineup. And then to contemporary stuff as well. So you need to look in newspapers, books, what typefaces they use, how they work, and so on. And then you need to learn a lot about the writing system itself, which is, in case of Gujarati, quite a challenge because it's a syllabic system. So you need to learn how the syllables are formed, how they connect, and so on.
And there's many, many dozens of them. In Gujarati, many dozens of characters.
I think I will need to design like 200, 500, something like that, of glyphs or characters.
And they have to fit together in every conceivable working order. So that seems almost like an impossible task when you don't speak the language yourself.
Well, that's one advantage you probably can get from the language, that you can predict the combinations, which are meaningful and which are not. But it's not so difficult to figure out without knowing the language. You can run some statistics, or you can ask some people who can read the language and print them some samples, and they would point out, hey, this is not working, this is working. And also you can kind of predict what can happen.
The Gujarati language isn't the only language that uses the Gujarati script. Is that right?
I think there are some minor languages which use it, but Gujarati is the dominant one.
And do you have to take them into consideration as well?
Yes. Well, this is more interesting for Devanagari, which is used for Hindi, Marathi, Nepali, and Sanskrit, where if you want to, and some more languages, if you want to support, say, Marathi, you ought to add few more characters in order to make it work, or consider different combinations and so on.
And so why Gujarati? Why did you decide to get it, to begin working on a script for that system?
I think it's simply I like it on a very superficial level. It's much simpler than Devanagari, and it's one of the easiest scripts from the Indian subcontinent. I don't know, Bengali and Tamil, they are much more visually complex, and they seem to me too difficult to start with. So I thought, well, this is nice. And then I realized that I actually like it very much, because it's a really good script. It's difficult to explain, but when you work with some other scripts, you realize, with some other Indian scripts, you realize that they carry so much of a legacy, and it seems like this is so not practical. Why don't do it a different way? And then you realize that, hey, Gujarati is doing it a different way, and it was a good choice at some point in the history to do it that way. So,
and is it not daunting to try to imagine what 60 million potential users of this script might like? Because obviously, even through all your research, you can't know everything that they're used to.
Mm. There are two aspects of it. I try not to think about it too much. And I'm not enforcing this particular font. I'm not enforcing. If they like it, they come and they buy it. So that's good. And the other aspect is there are so few good Gujarati typefaces that doing anything new is a good step. So it's extending, let's say, the typographic language of the script. So I think it's really important to try, at least. And there is not enough knowledge in Gujarat itself about the script. And in a sense, they don't know much about type design for their own script. This may sound a bit, arrogant from me to say, but there really needs to be a discussion about it and maybe some governmental incentives towards the script. Otherwise, it will look as bad as it looks today.
In your research into Gujarati and other languages like Greek and languages that use Cyrillic, what is that depth of exploration of different writing systems brought you personally? I mean, in Czech they say the more languages you speak, the more you are of a man. This is, would be similar, I would expect.
There is something about it. It helped me to rethink my view of type design. I wouldn't be perhaps so rigid about my Latin designs. Yeah, and about the methodology, it's certainly really helpful, and it's good inspiration. In a way, I borrowed something from Gujarati into my Italic. It's very hidden, invisible, but there is something about it that I designed the Italic for my Latin design after I played with Gujarati, and then I carried it back. So in this sense, yes, it's quite fun. And it's very useful when you are explaining students things about type design. Thanks to the fact that I know more scripts, I can be, let's say, more careful, or I could put it in a way that they wouldn't end up being just Latin designers. They would easily transfer their skills towards some other script.
It makes me wonder, is there a kind of globalization of writing systems occurring at a very slow rate through this kind of multicultural, multilinguistic designing?
It's very tricky. You need to be super careful when you're designing, say, for Devanagari. You need to be careful about not bringing your Latin preconceptions into it. But it can be done. You can educate yourself about the script, and you can learn, okay, they don't have a concept of serif, they don't have this idea of some specific terminals and some features, and it aligns from top to bottom, not from bottom to top, and things like that. But you'd still hear people saying, hey, you're a foreigner, you're sort of influencing other script. But then you notice that especially in India, what is happening is that the dominant language, that is Hindi, and writing system is Devanagari, is influencing the other scripts. So particularly in Gujarati, you can see that the Indian designers, maybe even Gujarati designers, are borrowing shapes from the other script. So there is like a sometimes great mixture of things. So yeah, you need to be careful, but they are kind of used to it. To this blending. I don't think it's right. I think it shouldn't happen on an individual basis. You know, the one designer can spoil everything, so it takes a great responsibility. But it is happening. So,
do you feel the sky's the limit, and you could work even on Korean or Japanese type fonts, or some things impossible?
These things. I'm not sure about Korean, but Japanese and Chinese, these things are typically team projects. And I said to myself, look, do just few things right instead of exploring the whole world. So I think at some point I will start either collaborating with people, which in fact I already started with the Devanagari, or I will just not go into that area. It's crazy. Such an amount of work.
That was David Brezhnev talking to Christian Falvey, and that edition of Panorama was first broadcast in April 2012. That was the final part of Radio Prague's English show for today, but you can still catch all of our shows online at radio.cz, and you can always get in touch with the show with any questions you might have, or just to tell us what you think, by writing to english@radio.cz or to Vinohradska 12, postal code 12099, Prague 2. But that's all for now. So goodbye from me, Maggie Lund, and everybody else at Radio Prague, and thank you very much for joining us.